I want to research how do students choose careers. My hypothesis is that students do what their parents do, or what their parents' friends do, or what their friends' parents do, that they don't know career options outside of that. And now, where we have so many careers that nobody's parents did, you know, nobody did cybersecurity because it didn't exist, that we have a real disconnect.
I'm Dan Smullen, and this is the Dan Smullen Podcast. We help people to navigate the future of work, to work that is profound, protects the planet, empowers people and communities, and is fun to do, meaningful work. The stories that our guests tell and the insights that they provide will inspire you to connect with work and experiences that stoke your passions and make the world a better place. For the future of work is meaningful work. During May 2021, we stepped back from our usual guest interviews to focus on the mission of the Dan Smullen Experience, to help people find success and enjoyment in the work that they do and hope to do. When I established the Dan Smullen Experience at the beginning of 2018, I had in mind a career journey model that looks like strands of DNA, made up of countless combinations of four components. And while our DNA were predetermined at conception, the strands of our career empowerment DNA are determined by us throughout our working lives. We get to choose what they are. The four career journey components we see that get people to blissful work and career experiences are dream, explore, strategize, and act. First, we encourage people of all ages, backgrounds, and levels of education and training to dream about the kind of work that they believe will make them happy and well-purposed. Next, we guide them to explore opportunities to do the work that they dream about. Then we focus them to strategize, to align with the skill and experience needed to do the work and opportunities of their choosing. And last, we prod them to act, to seize on the opportunities to do the work of their dreams. We believe the key to success is intentionality, allowing dreams, explorations, strategies, and actions to happen fluidly. To truly be successful in the future of work, we must be career intentional about dreaming, exploring, strategizing, and acting throughout our lives. You can find useful and actionable podcast episodes and blog posts on dansmullen.com. Use the spyglass to search for dream, explore, strategize, and act. And when on the site, make sure you sign up for our free newsletter. Just click the newsletter tab at the top of the page, then click subscribe, and you'll be on your way. In a dynamic future of work, agility is key, and our ever-changing dreams can help us align with future success. So now you know the four components of our career journey model. Last week, we discussed the first of them, dreaming. In this episode, we focus on the second component, exploring. What do you remember from your youth about exploring future work opportunities? If you were like most people, you probably don't remember much. But I have vivid memories of my youthful career explorations. As I mentioned in last week's episode, 12-year-old me wanted to be an architect. And my 6th grade teacher, Mr. Gene Zandri, did his best to encourage me to draw buildings and community spaces. But that career dream got dashed by a well-meaning adult, an award-winning architect, who lamented that there wasn't a lot of upside in architecture careers. After 6th grade, I moved with my family from New Haven, Connecticut, to the Maryland suburbs of Washington, D.C. And it was during 7th grade that I attended my first school-sponsored career event. Back in the day, teachers, guidance counselors, and administrators reached out to the school community often drawing in parents, friends of parents, and neighbors to talk about their careers. Seventh grade career day was a strange affair. Arranged in haste, my school hosted three career professionals to address an assembly of several hundred students. First to tell his career story was my friend Kathy's dad. He was the community's well-respected veterinarian. He talked about all of the animal species that he and his practice cared for, including the stable full of Percheron workhorses at a nearby farm that he was scheduled to treat after the career assembly. I liked him. He was kind, and he spoke cheerfully and enthusiastically about his career. Yet, as interesting was the discussion of running a veterinary practice, I just couldn't get past the years of college and several more of veterinary school that one needed to become a vet. Nor could I dream meaningfully about doing such work. Second to address the audience was an actual rocket scientist, a celebrated aerospace engineer from a company called ComSat. They launched and managed communication satellites that connected the world. And I could see that the math and science kids in the audience leaned forward when he talked about his previous experiences working for NASA, where he helped launch astronauts into space. But I didn't see space in my dreams either. Last up, a silver-haired gentleman took to the podium. "Hello, everyone. My name is Hal Shaw, and I work in the field of broadcasting." Mr. Shaw explained that he was a sales executive for Channel 9, the local CBS affiliate in Washington, D.C. A boy seated several rows behind me suddenly belted out, "Hey, you're Ranger Hal." Well, that didn't register with me. I was new to the D.C. area. But Mr. Shaw nodded his head to confirm that he was, or at least used to be, Ranger Hal. Hal Shaw gained considerable popularity in the 1950s and 60s as Ranger Hal, the host of an afternoon kids show on Washington, D.C.'s Channel 9. He told jokes, sang songs, tumbled the audience effortlessly, and brought joy to thousands of young children. Ranger Hal worked in a tough media market. Across town at Channel 4, Willard Scott starred in a competing kid show as Bozo the Clown. After Bozo, Willard Scott became Channel 4's popular weatherman, and during the 1980s and 1990s, he gained national attention as the weatherman on NBC's Today Show. When Ranger Hal's show ended, Hal Shaw pivoted away from entertainment to a variety of managerial roles at Channel 9. And he found his greatest success selling advertising time for the station's news and locally based programs. I was drawn in by Hal Shaw's enthusiastic presentation, and his career storytelling lit a fire within me. As a natural communicator, I saw through him many pathways to explore in broadcasting and media. Immediately after the event, I approached Mr. Shaw. He looked at me cheerfully and asked my name, and then he handed me a business card. "Would you like to visit Channel 9?" he asked. I don't remember the words that flowed from my mouth, but I was thrilled by the invitation and enjoyed the private tour of the station, which he hosted several weeks later. My career exploration got its first traction because of Hal Shaw. He graciously encouraged me to contact him for guidance. Mr. Shaw was the first mentor of many to encourage me to develop my writing skill and in high school get involved in student journalism, and I did that. In my junior year, I became editor of my high school's paper. Mr. Shaw also introduced me to local radio personalities who allowed me to sit in on their broadcasts. For a young teen, it was an experience akin to full access in a well-stocked candy store. I knew early in my youth that I wanted to pursue a career in broadcast media, and in my senior year of high school, I applied early decision and was accepted to the Park School of Communications at Ithaca College, one of the most elite broadcast communications programs in the U.S. I knew I was fortunate. Most kids leave high school without the benefit of early career exploration, and today, many college graduates haven't dreamed about or explored their professional career pathways. Hal Shaw did me a solid, and with his encouragement and thoughtful guidance, I was on an early career track that stoked my passions. You will recall my mentioning that I'm well onto my fourth career act. I started in radio as a news reporter, pivoted to executive work in advertising and marketing, enjoyed 20 years of success in executive recruiting, and then returned to the microphone as the host of a podcast designed to help people find and do meaningful work. In reliving my early career dreams for this episode, I remembered the importance of exploration. It helped me visualize happy career possibilities, and it encouraged me to learn and continually refine my career journey. Whether you are just starting off in your career, or like me, onto your next career chapter, do make a deliberate effort to explore opportunities to do the work of your dreams. Whether you seek a full-time assignment or a side hustle, be intentional and explore. The muse of exploration often visits when we are relaxed. So, when you are not working or perhaps on vacation, soften your ears and eyes and open yourself to creative career exploration. Professor Ann Holton of George Mason University in Virginia shares my belief that career exploration opportunities must happen early in education to help young people apply their time and develop STEM and STEAM skill proficiencies early. Along with her husband, U.S. Senator Tim Kaine, Professor Holton is a champion for career and technical education. Together, they are exploring ways to help kids from all walks of life, educational backgrounds, and means to explore professional careers for in-demand jobs that pay well and offer long-time benefit and enjoyment. We recorded a podcast interview with Professor Holton during September 2020 over Zoom, and from this segment, you'll discover her passion for helping young people explore their career dreams. So let's tee up for our audience why Ann Holton is here. You are the former Secretary of Education for the Commonwealth of Virginia, and until recently, you served as the interim president at George Mason University. And further, you and your husband, Senator Tim Kaine, share a passion for education and workforce empowerment. So I consider you a nationally recognized thought leader in the future of work, and that's why you're here. So let's get started. What are our workforce stakeholders in education and business and in government doing to invest in people so that they succeed in the future of work?
Great question, Dan, and thank you first for that kind introduction. I did work on workforce issues in my time as Secretary of Education in Governor McAuliffe's cabinet and obviously in my role at Mason, and it's one of my interests in my academic role here at Mason, so delighted to join your broader conversation. But what are we doing? How are we doing in investing in talent? I would say not enough. I think that there are serious deficiencies in the investment in talent in the United States. There's some innovative things that are happening, and particularly here in Virginia, and happy to talk about them. But when I say not enough, I think we are seriously underinvesting in Virginia and across the nation, and not wisely investing in K-12 education, pre-K, K-12. And the investments really need to start with pre-K. You know this evidence of how much is happening in brain development, et cetera, in the very early years. But then in the K-12 space, I am a very passionate believer that we've got huge inequities in K-12 education. And we're at a point where our employers, our businesses need our entire workforce to be ready to step up to the plate, not just high performers. And if we're going to help students from all kinds of backgrounds, income, and diverse circumstances be successful in the workforce, we've got to invest more robustly in K-12 education. And then at the higher ed level, we've got great higher ed institutions, including mine, a great job on, I like to say, access to excellence, accepting a lot of students who are first gen, 40% of our students our first generation in our family to get a higher ed degree, struggle on the finances. You know, Pell grants haven't kept up. Other state financing hasn't kept up. it's harder and harder to complete higher education for folks who don't come from wealth.
I would imagine Virginia offers an interesting story in that we're almost like a tale of two cities. Here in Northern Virginia, where you happen to be today and I reside, we have a lot of advantages. My daughter graduated from Prince William County Public Schools. She got a great education. She's now at VCU and studying to be a forensic scientist. So she got the best of it. And here in Northern Virginia also, we have a high-tech workforce. I think the last time I looked, when you were Secretary of Education, it was about 10% of our total workforce in Northern Virginia is high-tech trained. And yet in other regions of Virginia, like in Southwest, workers who dream of career success struggle from a lack of opportunity. So those stakeholders that we talked about, how should they empower the workforce to provide real scalable opportunities? What are your thoughts?
Yes, you are right. We are a Nova and Rova, I've heard people say, the rest of Virginia. You're absolutely right that there are some regions like Southwest Virginia that struggle. But I'd like to say, I really think it's poverty related, because some of the challenges in Southwest Virginia are very similar to the challenges in our urban high poverty communities. I will say one strength we have in Virginia is such a strong community college system. And the community colleges in Virginia were designed to be no more than 30 miles from every Virginian. And they actually have some pretty strong online programs even before the pandemic in the community college system. And they do workforce training that not all geared towards four-year degrees. So mm-hmm. Some of the challenges out in Southwest Virginia, for instance, are sort of chicken and the egg problems. We have economies that need to be reshaped around new opportunities, not all mining-based. And it's hard because people get training and then there are no jobs, but the jobs say they won't come there because there's no trained workforce. So it's a challenge. I've got some friends actually who are doing a really interesting business approach where there are folks who've worked with companies that have offshored jobs to India before in the sort of medium tech skill area. They're now working to export those jobs to Southwest Virginia instead of India. And, this time when we're all recognizing some of the downsides of the global economy, what about Northern Virginia businesses who have, as I say, middle tech skills jobs? What about encouraging them to set up shop in Abington and West, where there absolutely are folks now going through training programs at the community colleges and partnering with the community colleges? And we even have higher ed out there. The UVA WISE is a great program. And we are blessed in Virginia to have good higher ed options if you could address the access, the financial access issues.
So there is an inequity in terms of STEM skills across the Commonwealth. I mean, Northern Virginia, I think we do a pretty good job. Not great, but pretty good. It can always be room for improvement.
Yeah.
And certainly that's our goal, to have those best-in-class STEM and STEAM skills for every student in every school in the Commonwealth. So assuming that's in place, what then becomes the role of a community college? Do they get to work with companies to provide that real-time training that's needed for, let's say, the clean tech company that has a specialized skill set and the population doesn't have those skills? Do they become the conduit to providing those skills for the companies that are hiring locally?
Yeah, great question. So I think you're right, starting off with the premise that we do have strong STEM programs in the K-12 environment in Northern Virginia. The first thing we need to do is make sure that we have equally strong STEM programs in all of our K-12 offerings. Another focus I think that our K-12 schools can do, and it does involve our business community, talk community colleges as well, is helping students with career exploration. So a particular interest I have is I want to research how do students choose careers. My hypothesis is that students do what their parents do, or what their parents' friends do, or what their friends' parents do, that they don't know career options outside of that. And now, where we have so many careers that nobody's parents did, nobody did cybersecurity because it didn't exist, that we have a real disconnect. And I do see this in both K-12 and higher ed students I work with. They just don't know what market is out there. They don't know what workforce opportunities are. They don't have a sense of how to connect their interests to jobs. And so K-12 has a responsibility. And actually, I sit on the Board of Education for Virginia, and we have, over the last few years, started requiring more of our high schools in terms of exposing students to career opportunities. Part of that is we've encouraged and incentivized the high schools to give students more work-based learning opportunities, but that requires employer partnership. So one thing our businesses can be doing is calling up your local high school and figuring out how to make it possible to get your people into the high school and the high school students into your business. And, you know, businesses get nervous. Oh, if I have students on premises, high school age, you know, what are the safety risks, et cetera? All of those can be overcome with thoughtful work with your local high school. So internships, externships, just things to expose students to what are options because they really don't know what the options are. And then at the higher ed level, we've got a number of things going on in Virginia in community colleges and four-year colleges that connect businesses and students around specific skill sets. So for instance, I'll just give you a couple. At Mason, we have been ahead of the curve in working with the Greater Washington Partnership. You know, that group of very high-end, large businesses in the area have developed something they're calling digital credentials. And essentially, those large employers have gotten together and said, well, what is the sort of digital fluency that we need in all of our students, not just our incoming employees, not just the computer science majors? What do we need of everybody? And those that came up with sort of 15 or so skills, knowledges, and abilities. And we at Mason were the first to put together essentially a set of courses. I think it's 5 or so courses that a history major could take or students with any major could sign up for and complete a digital credential that will ensure those employers they have that talent. That's just one example of partnering with industry that Mason have done, among many, frankly, that we've done, partnering directly with employers to help meet their needs. But another one I thought I would mention is the community colleges statewide are in the middle skills job. We're talking about filling not necessarily 4-year or beyond higher ed jobs. There's a lot of jobs to be filled that require something beyond high school, but it may be a 2-year degree, or it may even be, you know, a 12-week training program. Under Governor McAuliffe started a pay-for-performance, essentially, workforce credential grant system, partnering with community colleges and businesses. The businesses identify the high-demand credential needs, and then essentially the cost is divided a third, a third, and a third. The employer or the student pays a third up front. The community college gets from the grant a payment of a third upon the student's completion, so it's pay for success of the course, and gets another third upon completion of the industry recognized credential. So you don't have to just finish the course, you actually have to take the test to be licensed as whatever it is you're pursuing. But that kind of close partnership between students, employers, and community colleges, I think, is a real model for the nation.
I hope you can see the big smile on my face because you're speaking my language, Anne. And a couple of things. Number one, when you start that research, I hope I can be in the room to participate because this is what drives the work that I do, is getting people towards meaningful work. And when you were in Governor McAuliffe's administration, it was around the time that I and a bunch of other people were participating in a plan to drive more clean tech work into the Commonwealth. And I took it upon myself to design a workforce strategy. And it was like trying to roll a boulder up a hill. Why? Because what I discovered in my primary research is that our schools do a really crappy job of introducing students to career development and doing it in a way that lights a fire under them. Yeah. I talked to one school system, and the gentleman, lovely man, said, oh, well, you know, send us posters. I'm like, what's that going to do? That's like out of the 1950s.
Yeah.
I love what you say about creating stakeholder relationships with hiring managers when students are young and malleable. I love that. And I'd love to see us do more of bringing young people on the job site to just experience what it's like to work out in the field on a solar project or in a factory that's making clean tech or some of the other things that are going on in the workforce right now. Because that's when to talk to your future workforce, when they're young and they're sponges, not when they are in college and they're freaking out about grades and about making a lot of money on a job.
And they really are clamoring. They're dying to have more information. You know, high school students are really starting to think about their future. And sadly, you know, surveys of students disconnect their feeling of motivation and interest in school And so our high schools have really got to take a different approach. And the good news is in Virginia, we haven't fixed everything, but we have partly our whole accreditation model was just so darn test-based and content knowledge focused. And we've started to back off that to give high schools a little more room and a little more guidance and encouragement to be doing this kind of work. Starting really actually in middle schools, we now require a career exploration course.
Beautiful.
A semester-long curriculum. And the notion is that students would develop a career plan that would then follow them. And some of those experiences, the student who takes a CTE program in healthcare in high school and discovers he can't stand the sight of blood, well, you know, that's a useful knowledge even on the paths you decide not to take, but to at least get some exposure. I'll tell you a division you'd enjoy hearing about, Hampton Schools, one of my favorite divisions in Virginia, who do all kinds of innovative things, but they've started doing just recently, is that they've basically taken their whole high school program over to an academies model. All ninth graders all enter, I can't remember what they call the ninth grade academy, but it's essentially a orientation to thinking about careers approach for ninth grade. And then 10th through 12th, everybody goes into a law enforcement academy or a healthcare academy, or a, you know, there's a dozen or more choices where your core courses are connected to work in that field and you're getting exposure. I went down to visit at some point and some of this is building on, you know, the CTE people were doing, have been doing this kind of work all along, but building on things like the culinary students. Fed the group I was there with a wonderful lunch and then showed us the movie they had developed as part of the competition they were about to fly off to Houston for, that was learning how to make meals for astronauts.
And oh, wow.
So they were learning how to cook. They were learning the challenges of food in space. They were learning how to make movies about that, what they were doing, because that was part of the requirement. It was all experiential learning. And the students were so engaged and, you know, they come to school, they want to do the work because it's interesting for them. And even, as I say, even those who may end up not pursuing those culinary students, some of them may have gone into film instead of, but to be passionate about something, to be exposed to something in the work world that early on, I think is really valuable.
Links to Professor Ann Holton's social media are included in the show notes for this episode at dansmolin.com. Next week, we will return with a new podcast episode, this one focused on the third component of your career journey to meaningful work, strategizing. Meantime, if you haven't done so, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you get them, or listen to current and past episodes on our website at dansmolin.com. And please take a moment to positively rate and comment wherever you listen to this podcast, because that helps us to connect with new listeners. I'm Dan Smolin, and this is the Dan Smolin Podcast. Thank you for joining us on an amazing journey to the future of work doing meaningful work. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Let's connect again next week.